irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Live.
Boy, are you ever on this very gray California day. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
A very gray California
day. On the 10th of December. It's kind of humid and cool at the same time.
Right? That's right. Michael, do you know who I'm not?
Who aren't you?
I'm not Paul Strohle.
You're not Paul Strohle.
I can
That's
tell
correct.
Because I cannot fit my body inside a size 14 shoe.
I see.
That's true.
That'd be hard to do your whole body.
That's right.
Yes, indeed. No, you are not. You are Andrew David James, who is sitting in for Paul Strohle, who is on the East Coast with his wife, visiting family for the holidays, since we're happy to have you, Andrew.
And Miss Paul.
Yes, I do, too. I got a little note from him very early this morning, and everything's good there.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, absolutely. Shall we thank our sponsors?
I'd love to.
All right. We'd like to thank, ladies and gentlemen, our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
Indeed we are. And you know what, Andrew? I am so looking forward to the show today, honestly, because we're celebrating the West Coast premiere, right? The West Coast premiere and the rise to fame of two of pop music's most enduring recording artists, Bill Medley and Bobby Hatfield, the Righteous Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Great music.
Yeah.
Great music.
I know it's great.
Yeah.
You are so right.
But first, before we speak to our guest, I would like to go ahead and say that they were not only incomparable in their time, of course, the Righteous Brothers, but beyond that, we have today in studio the modern embodiment of both of those men, two of the stars of the new musical titled That Loving Feeling, getting ready to enjoy its West Coast premiere engagement at the Lonnie Chapman Theater for the Group Rep Theater Company beginning tomorrow, December 11th through January 24th. Let's say hello to Brendan McDonald and Morgan Loff.
Hi, guys.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
I must correct you on one thing.
I'd love to hear
that love-in. Feeling.
You know what? You're right. I'm in theater mode. That loving feeling.
You're
I have no
Christmas
soul. I was going to put a little soul in today, but I'm 18th century British right now. So that loving feeling.
That apostrophe at the end of that loving.
You're right.
Feeling.
That loving feeling. And if you hear the Righteous Brother, you hear that soul. The Righteous Brothers had that from the very first note they sang.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing. Yes, they did.
You're right.
And, I can't wait to see your performances. And Brendan, we can't thank you enough for taking time out on your birthday today to be here with us on State of the Art. Should we give him a round of applause?
I think that's absolutely worthy.
Here we are. Come on, studio audience. There you go. Awesome.
Thank you.
And may I ask how young you are?
27 today.
27. And you look all of about 21, actually.
Oh, well, great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes, you have a long career.
How old are you in the show? How old do you play?
We start at about like early 20s, I want to say.
Wow.
And then we age till,
What, closer to 63?
Yeah.
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 Amazing.
You do.
Amazing.
Well, we don't.
We don't.
Okay. So
we stay youthful.
In the realm, yes.
Well, you should.
That's a long run.
Well, you should. Well, before we speak to the fellows individually, Andrew, how was your week? I know that tonight is opening night of your show.
It is, Michael.
A Christmas Carol, a spectacular version of it. You're portraying Bob Cratchit, presented by the Thousand Oaks Rep Company at the beautiful Share Forum in the Thousand Oaks Civic Arts Plaza. Are you ready to go up tonight?
I have to go up tonight?
Yeah.
I wasn't prepared, Michael.
Yeah.
No. Yes. Actually, the truth of the matter is we have had three performances already.
Oh, you have?
Yes. So I'll tell you the hidden secret.
Preview performances?
They are. Okay. We do previews for schools, and we had 350 school students there this morning. I came directly from there to here.
Wow.
And, Michael, I will tell you, it's amazing to watch kids get their experience in the theater for the first time. A lot of these are high school students who've never been to a show before. And it's something that they reach out to do to make sure the kids can have a chance to see theater. theater, but it's also kind of a service to the community to say, hey, if we're going to invest in the arts, let's invest in our children. And so the kids come out, they fill up that sheer forum, and of course there's some kissing in it, which always goes over very well with the school students. The first question at the talkbacks, we do talkbacks, the first question
is, as long as there's no making out in the audience, right?
No, I mean, occasionally I'll find someone I go down there with, but the producer pulls me away very quickly.
You're up to that again.
That's right. It's interesting because the kids, the first question they ask will always be, is the kissing real? Is the kissing real? Which is fascinating because as actors, we've moved past that years ago. We're thinking about blocking and lines, and it's a very funny thing to see and a very endearing thing to see too.
Well, so you're feeling good about everything then?
I am.
You're ready for the opening time.
Absolutely. I tell you, opening night, what a great industry we're in, because those feelings before opening night, it's always a very positive thing and everybody's excited, and it doesn't matter how tired you are, you can do anything that night.
So it's absolutely a cool thing. Well, yeah. to get tickets for this wonderful production of A Christmas Carol out at Thousand Oaks at the Scherer Forum Theater, beautiful theater. It's very simple. Ticketmaster or by calling the Thousand Oaks Civic Arts Plaza box office at 805-449-2787. And it runs for until the 15th?
We do. We run through the weekend.
Fantastic.
All right. So, Michael, if I may, they also have a deal for tonight on Gold Star for
really?
A few seats left.
Oh, sure.
Half-price tickets. May I ask you how your week was?
You may.
Are you going to be honest with us, or are you going to tell us the rosy version?
No. There is no rosy version. It's just what it is. No, I just... was fighting what the doctor diagnosed, a sinus infection, and I was okay with that because then I was taking antibiotics and thought, okay, this is good. I had was supposed to be at the opening of If Then last night. Advantageous, and on the red carpet doing celebrity interviews for Broadway World TV, which I do frequently, and I had to call and cancel out of that.
Oh.
So New York was pretty disappointed. They were sympathetic, but they said, okay, And then if I wouldn't have done that and tried to do it, I would have been a mess, I guess.
Yeah.
Because everything kicked in and it was compounded unfortunately, by food poisoning.
Ugh.
Yeah, so that was rough, but I got 10 hours of sleep last night, so I woke up this morning feeling pretty good.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
So, and I'm actually going to the opening of Bridges of Madison County this evening to work on the red carpet there for Broadway World TV.
That'll be great.
Yeah, so I'm trying to pace myself.
Yeah, well, we're glad
today.
You're back, and I want to know how you always look so darn good, no matter how bad you feel.
I don't know.
Good
genes?
Is that a deal with the devil?
No, maybe.
It's good to have you back, and good to have you well,
Thank
Michael.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So we are moving on, and you're going to give us our first the intro for our first guest?
I certainly can, although I got to tell you, Michael, you book these amazing guests because you know absolutely everyone in this town. Can you stop getting guys who are so good-looking? I'm starting to feel bad about myself. And can we get some ladies in here at some point?
Well, yeah, absolutely
All
we
right.
can.
Good.
Absolutely.
Ladies and gentlemen, having just received his BFA in theater performance from Chapman University, our next guest has hit the ground sprinting. He has been seen on stage in such productions as Hamlet, Anna in the Tropics, The Tavern,
Machinal.
Say it again.
Machinal.
And that's what I'm going to go with. Machinal. And Present Laughter in various theaters around Southern California. He's here today to talk about his portrayal of pop icon Bill Medley in, wait for it, That Lovin' Feeling.
Mm. Well, I liked it when you said the modern embodiment.
Right?
That was probably the best description we've ever had so
far. I have the Word of Day toilet paper, and that was on it today. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the star of the show, Morgan Lauff.
Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Morgan, a little
great
slow
to see
on the draw there. They
good
were.
To see you too. Thank you.
Well,
thanks for having
absolutely.
Us.
Reading and clicking buttons on this.
No. I wasn't saying about you, about the audience themselves.
The frightening thing is that
they were making out.
The audience has started doing whatever they want now. That's
exactly.
right. They may have been making out.
They heard what you were talking about.
That's right. Morgan, how are you doing? Well,
I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
I'm great. I'm excited to hear about this show. I got to tell you, I love the Righteous Brothers. They are absolutely one of my favorite musical groups of all time.
They're a lot of fun.
How did you get cast in this show?
Well, it was through a friend. I'm going to drop a name, Todd Ball. Thankfully,
I know Todd Ball.
I know Todd Ball.
Great? Wonderful actor.
Yeah,
great
he's
actor.
Great.
Comedic,
yes,
he very fun.
Yeah. He messaged me and he said, hey, we're holding auditions for young Bill Medley for That Lovin' Feeling at the group rep. And I wasn't really doing anything at the time. I had just finished working at Warner Brothers. I was doing some touring there. And So I was looking for the next project. And so,
what do you mean you're doing touring? You were a tour guide?
Yeah, I was
a
tour guide. No, I was a tour guide.
He just showed up each day and took tours
until somebody noticed him.
He's living at the studio.
Posting a sign next to the studio. It's like, we'll tour for free or food. But anyway, so he messaged me and I was like, yeah, let's do it. Great. And so I auditioned. I auditioned for a great guy named Paul Cady, who plays Older Bill. And he's our musical director. And I auditioned for the artistic director there. And it was just myself. It was a really cool story because after I auditioned, they had ordered pizza. And so after the audition was over, they're like, okay, we're going to call you back. Just be there on Saturday. Do you want pizza? And I was like, yes.
It's the best audition ever.
And so afterwards, it was me, Larry, Michelle, and Paul, and we were all sitting around eating pizza after the audition, just talking about, you know, life. And I was like, is this how it's going to be like every time?
So they actually kind of took your order.
Oh,
in
yeah,
advance.
Basically. Wow. Basically. And so I was like, if that's a sign, I don't know what else is.
That's great.
Well, you're also working with some wonderful people. You've got
really
Jules
wonderful.
Aaron directing,
oh, yeah.
Who's awesome with pretty much everything he does.
He's very meticulous.
Yes, he is.
Very meticulous.
Producing Larry Eisenberg, who is wonderful, and Doug Haverty, of course, who's another wonderful producer. And James Zimmerman is the writer on this show.
Great. That's right. Mm-hmm.
And with over 30 years of experience, that's not too shabby, is it?
No, it's not
so
too shabby at all.
Let me ask you something. Were you familiar with the Righteous Brothers?
When yeah.
You were?
Oh, yeah. I grew up listening to oldies and all that stuff. You know, I grew up in the Bay Area, and I listened to KFRC in San Francisco. And so they would play oldies and the Righteous Brothers and stuff like that. And Unchained Melody, of course, you know, from Ghost. You know, I was mm-hmm. raised on that movie, too. And so I was very familiar with the Righteous Brothers, but not obviously not to the extent of how familiar we are with them now. But I was, you know, because I grew up listening to Elvis, Ray Charles, all that stuff, and the Righteous Brothers fit in that same category.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, not everybody has that opportunity to be exposed to those kinds of artists, being as young as you are.
Right, definitely. You know, this generation's definitely, you know, more towards, you know, the modern, like Justin Bieber, Jay-Z, Drake, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, while I respect them, that's just, you know, a genre that I never really saw myself getting into.
Do you actually like that kind of music, though?
You know, again, I respect it.
Okay.
I respect it, and I think it's definitely a different art form, and, you know, I feel like music definitely transcends time, and, you know, if it tells a story well, and if it tells a story effectively, and, you know, above all, if it has a great sound,
right.
then I love it. You know, like Adele's new album.
She's an exception.
You know,
she's the rule, I think.
Yeah, and she just produces wonderful music.
And she's also much older than any of the people that you had just mentioned previously.
Oh, right.
Who has that life experience to be able to bring to the songs
totally.
That she chooses to sing.
Totally. But it does attract the modern audience. And,
yes.
And so it's like if it works, then, you know,
right.
it obviously they're obviously doing something right.
And she's kind of a mystery, isn't she?
Very much so. That's very true. You're right. And I think she likes that.
She's very to herself.
She wants to be that way. It kind of creates a mystique around her. People want to find out more.
Well, and or just gives her maintain somewhat of a more normal life than she would otherwise perhaps have.
Totally.
Yeah. Morgan, it's interesting. You two are starring. Both of you gentlemen are starring in the show. And you're embodying these people who are legends. I mean,
right.
absolute legends. What is that pressure like when you first approach it? And have you met Bill? And of course, have you read up on him and all that sort of thing as well?
Well, no pressure at all.
Right?
the play is based off of Bill Medley's autobiography, The Time of My Life, which is a wonderful book if you haven't read it yet. I recommend it. And it really depicts the story of the Righteous Brothers from Bill's perspective. And what we try to do is get it into more of a neutral state to where we understand both Bobby and Bill. And embodying Bill is quite the challenge because, as we mentioned before, I'm more of a character actor. So I love doing my research and watching YouTube videos and listening to the voice and trying to get that timbre and trying to get the gestures and the movements that Bill would make and stuff like that to really embody the character without losing, you know, of course, mm-hmm. myself and putting mm-hmm. myself into the
sure.
role. But it's not necessarily mimicry, but it's embodying the character and embodying Bill. And to answer your question, we have not met Bill Medley yet. We're hoping that he might come out, but it's not official yet.
So he hasn't seen the show yet.
Surely.
He's definitely been invited. He is definitely aware that the show is happening, and we would definitely love for him to come out. He's from Orange County. He was born and raised in Orange County.
Yeah, both of them were from Orange.
And basically, yeah. Bobby was, I believe, from Wisconsin originally, and then he basically grew up in Orange County. And so Bill's still there, Newport Beach area, really nice area. And so
is that where he lived originally when he was there? Is Newport Beach?
Orange, actually.
Orange.
Yeah, Santa Ana,
Orange.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is where Chapman is. So it's kind of funny.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's 6 degrees
right
there.
Yeah.
What was something you learned during this rehearsal process that maybe you didn't know? Obviously, there was a ton of stuff, but something that kind of surprised you that you didn't know about this man when you started to take over the role?
Bill is actually more outgoing than I thought he was. Hmm. I thought Bobby was the more outgoing one, and Bill was just really reserved and kind of, passive aggressive, which Bill is very passive, but if you watch some of his videos and watch some of his interviews, he's kind of the dominant one that likes to talk and, like watching his videos in Shindig and stuff like that. He really loves to get into it and dance and stuff like that. So that was a surprising thing for me. And he's actually, very well spoken and, he loves to carry on a conversation. And that's something that I never thought that he was. I thought he was kind of like, a very simple one-word kind of guy, but he's not. He's quite the opposite.
Hmm.
So that's something that I feel like I resonate with as Morgan, and I feel like I could bring that into that role because that's something that I definitely really recognize as being a part of my personality trait.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, the research that you did you in that research, did you try to pull all of the vocals, as much as you could? I think you just said this, actually. But keeping your own take on that.
Right. And thankful.
Because I think that that's really the way it should be done.
Very much so.
Never trying to impersonate something.
You can't duplicate something identically. You can influence it kind of with your own ideas and that sort of thing and then embody what they were going for, right?
Right.
Yeah, I like that.
Because there's
much.
Only one Bill Medley.
There is only one Bill Medley, and yeah. I will 110% agree with that.
Now, to pay tribute to him as you are
exactly.
is the more interesting thing.
Exactly. Right. So, and I was we were very fortunate enough to have 3.5 weeks of our vocal rehearsal with our music director, Paul Cady, and he was really patient with us and, trying to find that sound and stuff like that without losing the essence of what our voices are, in everyday life. So that was definitely the challenge, trying to find that happy medium, honoring Bill, but also keeping our voices healthy and not straining it and stuff like that. Because Bill, as you'll see in the play, he definitely lost his voice in the middle of his career.
Wow.
And
he did from when he was singing solo in Las Vegas.
Absolutely.
Places, right?
In Vegas, because it was so dry there. And that was at the time that he had kind of split with Bobby. And so he was doing things on his own. And he was doing like 3 shows a night and at the Sands. And he definitely run his voice dry. And it was
uncommon.
Awful.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's definitely a significant difference when you hear him like in the 60s versus when you hear him in like in the mid 70s. Mm-hmm. There's definitely a difference in sound of his voice. And so hopefully, thankfully.
What is that difference for you?
It's much deeper and it's much more raspy without, a healthy raspy, because he was more in his chest when he was singing, in his younger days. But I feel like nowadays he's singing kind of in his chest and in his throat, because even when he talks, there's a significant difference when he talks and the timbre of his voice, which was very fun to find that research on, because there's very little footage of him actually talking back in the 60s, late 60s, as opposed to interviews today where there's an abundance of footage of him talking today. So that was a lot of fun trying to find that and trying to find that happy medium. And, it was difficult. It was difficult at first, but then it was easy, Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
One of the songs that he recorded with Jennifer Warrens, do you remember Jennifer, was I've Had the Time of My Life.
That's right.
One of my favorite songs, actually. And I went to high school with Jennifer.
Did you?
And in Santa Ana. That's where I went to high school. To modern day.
Crazy.
I went to modern day.
Oh,
high
okay.
That's great. Yeah. And Jennifer and I were the only two people in school who were in the arts.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
I was working as an actor, living down there and coming up here to work and
right.
on television and all that kind of stuff. And she was was an amazing singer, and she was a very legit singer, actually,
very.
At the time.
And did you stay in contact with her after high school?
We did, to some extent. Yeah. I mean, she got busy. I'm sure. Tommy Smothers became her fellow, and he put her on the Smothers Brothers show and introduced her to the world. And then she started, you know, reaching a different plateau in her career. And then she did the musical Hair.
That's right.
In Los Angeles at the Aquarius Theater. It was renamed for the production.
Wow.
Which was the old Moulin Rouge. Do you remember that too?
I was hearing about it, definitely.
And I went to see it, of course, because I was so excited. And at the end of the show, you know, the audience basically kind of is so involved, they go up on the stage with them. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. That's how I reunited with her.
She went, oh my God.
And
that's wonderful. That song, I've Had the Time of My Life, is actually the song that opens the show.
Oh, yeah?
Can you tell us a few other songs that you sing in the show?
Oh, well, obviously, You Lost That Lovin' Feelin'. Yep. We do a lot of older classics like Justine, Coco Joe, My Babe, and then the song that kind of started it for us, Little Latin Loopy Lou, which is really, really fun. We do that in the recording studio, and we have the live band, which sounds just amazing, live band. And it's just a four-piece band, but they really create that sound that is like the Phil Spector wall of sound. When we do that Love and Feeling, it is just awesome, and it gets us kind of giddy too. So it's like, so we get excited, but we also kind of have to concentrate and make sure that we're singing the right notes.
How many numbers in the show overall, musical numbers?
Over 20.
Wow.
Yeah.
So a lot of music that night. Go see a show together.
Definitely.
A lot of music, a lot of fun.
Yeah. Cool. Definitely.
It is very cool and very exciting. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, this is, of course, at the Lonnie Chapman Theater in North Hollywood, which is presented by the Group Repertory Company, a wonderful organization that does terrific work over there year in, year out. The theater is one of the most comfortable Equity Waiver theaters in town, by the way. I always have a pleasant experience when I go there.
Oh, good.
And it is running through January 24th. And it has opening tomorrow night, 8 p.m., and Fridays and Saturday evenings at 8 p.m., Sunday matinees at 2 p.m. And for tickets, let me just find that real quickly. I want to tell you about that. For tickets and information, go to thegrouprep.com or call 818-763-5990.
And, of course, if you want to find out a little bit about Morgan, you can visit his personal website, www.morganlauff.com. Morgan, thank you for being here today. You'll hang around with us for a bit?
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Nice.
Shall we do a live arts calendar,
I think we
Michael?
Should.
I'll
yes.
tell you what. I'd like to tell you about something I'm excited about.
Okay.
So, Michael, hang on to your fedora.
Okay.
Tony Award-winning director Mary Zimmerman's fetching revival of Guys and Dolls is as good as any production I've seen of the greatest of all the Golden Age musicals, proclaimed the Wall Street Journal when the Oregon Shakespeare Festival staged the Broadway musical classic Guys and Dolls earlier this year at its Ashland, Oregon-based theater. Now, for a limited run at the Wallace Annenberg Theater for the Performing Arts, you'll see it produced in Beverly Hills. The production is in the Bram Goldstein Theater for 24...
Goldsmith.
You're right. Goldsmith Theater for 24 performances now through December 20th.
That's right.
That's a great, great show.
That's right. Guys and Dolls, based, of course, on a story and characters by Damon Runyon with music and lyrics by Frank Lesser and book by Joe Swerling and A. Burroughs, is one of the most popular shows from the Golden Age of Broadway musicals. The family-friendly show features what are now some of the most iconic characters in theater history. Dashing Gambler, Skye Masterson, Salvation Army missionary Sarah Brown, crap game organizer Nathan Detroit, and his long-suffering fiancée, Miss Adelaide. The score is even more famous with popular hits including Luck Be a Lady, I've Never Been in Love Before, and Sit Down, You're Rockin' the Boat.
Peter Johnson and Kate Hurster lead the all-star cast and ensemble, so put your money on this musical fable of Broadway. Tickets range from $29 to $110 and are available at www.thewallis.org, www.thewallis.org, or by calling 310-746-4000, or in person at the Wallace Annenberg Center for the Performing Arts. Ticket service is located at 9390 North Santa Monica Boulevard in Beverly Hills.
Have you been to the Wallace Annenberg?
I got to tell you, I've never been to that. No, and it's
just spectacular.
I've been by there 100 times.
You've been?
We get so
Morgan?
Busy. Yeah.
Yeah. Brendan, have you been?
I haven't. No, I want to.
It's a beautiful, beautiful theater. So many years in the planning over there. So
how many stages there?
You know, I think there's just two.
Okay.
I'm not, I may be wrong about that.
It's a beautiful facility.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And you know, just another foot forward in keeping the arts alive, right?
You know that the Ashland Festival is such a wonderful festival up there, but they get rain constantly.
Yeah.
And that adds such an interesting dynamic for performers, particularly musical performers.
Since it is outside.
Exactly.
I've never been, but yeah.
Yeah. This show, from everything I've heard, was just amazing up there, and I can only imagine this can be as good or even better down here, so...
Fantastic. Well, they brought Into the Woods into that theater, I think, earlier this
year.
They did. Mm-hmm. Had equal critical success with that, too.
Good.
So, absolutely. All right. So we're moving on. And I'm going to give this gentleman his due here. Our next guest, ladies and gentlemen, is thrilled to be making his group repertory theater debut. He recently graduated from California Lutheran University and completed a summer intensive at the American Conservatory Theater in San Francisco. Credits include Orlando, As You Like It,
Melchior.
Melchior. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I thought I had it better than that. Melchior Gabor.
I'm glad you got one
better
of those,
better than too. Saying Ava Gabor or Zsa Gabor.
You get slapped for that if you're not careful.
that character, say it again for me.
Melchior.
Melchior Gabor in Spring Awakening, mm-hmm. Hairspray, Rent, and the title role in the musical Pippin. Give it up for Brendan McDonald.
Hey, birthday boy. Michael, do you see how much more on cue that audience is when I don't have to do the read leading?
Absolutely.
It's funny. I've got to orchestrate these people. It's tough to do crowd control around here.
They bus them in. And,
that's right.
You know, then they get all crazy.
Brendan, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for being here today.
Yeah, right?
Absolutely.
For me.
What are you doing for your birthday other than doing a show tonight?
Yeah,
celebrating with us.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah?
Taking it easy. Took work off today and, you know, just relaxing. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you do for it? What's your day job? Every actor has a day job.
My day job is I have actually two. So I work at a Pilates studio. It's Pilates Studio City. And then I am also a personal assistant for a psychologist. So, yeah.
Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Which job of the two do you like better?
It depends. They're very different. I like the personal assistant one because it's I feel a little bit more important. You know, I feel like I'm really helping someone.
Right.
You know, because he has a lot of different things to do. And the other job is kind of like a desk job, but it's good.
Yeah, he doesn't put you in the position of psychoanalyzing anybody, does he?
No.
Or worse, does he psychoanalyze you? Right?
I don't know yet.
I'm sorry I was late.
Well,
today.
You don't
why don't
know that
why?
You know.
Exactly.
You don't know when he is
reverse
or when
psychology.
He isn't.
Right.
Has he come in to see your show?
Yeah, he is. Probably in January, but yeah.
Fantastic. And what about everybody at the Pilates studio?
I don't know if they know about it yet.
Oh, they don't?
Yeah, because at front desk, there's like a bunch of us, and we all work separate shifts, so it's kind of hard for like that community to happen. I'm going to give them a flyer. So
tough to communicate that while you're twisted into a pretzel. You know, it's like you're getting your hand over here. That's pretty amazing. Now, do you teach or do you just work at the front desk?
I don't teach there, but I am MAT certified. I got MAT certified after I graduated college.
Cool.
Because I used to take from a teacher that taught us Pilates there at CLU. So I got certified through her and just been teaching privately when I can.
That's great.
So, yeah.
And this allows you to pursue your career in musical theater. Is it a career in musical theater that you prefer, or is it just a theater? All forms of the theater.
You know, I love musical theater. I've always loved musicals since I was a kid. So that's really something that I'm drawn to. But I love theater, and I love a play is such a different thing to do, you know, and but I'm definitely always open to both, so yeah.
But we say that on this program many times that, you know, there's nothing like being in the theater, of course, because every moment is its own. It's never going to happen again that way.
Yeah.
Regardless of how many times you do the show, it is what it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Unlike film and television, of course. But if you can succeed in film and television, then, of course, it gives you greater... a greater presence in the musical theater world.
Well, and I think you get a different satisfaction as well. We've had every guest in here, you know, has had to dabble in both. Certainly if you live in this town, it's tough to make a career just doing theater. But I think you find that one accentuates the other. You know, you can train different muscles in different times, but you can do both very well by the end of it. So, mm-hmm. Brenda, can you tell me a little bit about Bobby and what you've learned about him? Bobby's passed, is that correct?
Bobby has passed.
And what year did he die? 2003.
2003.
Oh, yeah. Wow, okay. Can you tell me a little bit about what you've learned about him?
Yeah, Bobby's kind of a wild card. And a mystery.
Not very much really. Like Michael. We've always said that here on the show.
There's not too much information on him. He tended to keep to himself. The only really information I had was really from the script and then from what Bill talked about. And like Morgan was saying, the play is really from Bill Medley's perspective. So it's you're kind of getting a filter when you're learning about Bobby. So that was kind of the challenge that I had to face. But he was someone that I think had a lot of energy and really loved to sing. And I think that he was more into singing with Bill than really being a star. And I think that that kind of drives a lot of his subtext throughout the show.
That's a really interesting thing, that perspective of it. Actually very psychoanalytical, isn't it, when you look at it? Could you tell me real quick, and this is something that I was curious about, when you're portraying somebody who's passed, and obviously there's still family members around and stuff, what is that responsibility like as far as how you want to portray that person and what you want to bring to the role that you feel like you can deliver that maybe nobody else could if they didn't have that research and that sort of thing? What are you trying to bring to it?
I think honesty. Mm-hmm. I think that's the best thing that I can try to bring to it, because he was a real person, and he has a life and family and, yeah, you know, that are still around. And I never want to bring something that would be dishonest or disrespectful to someone.
Very good. Now, like Bill Medley, has his family been contacted about the show?
I don't know. Oh. I'm not sure, because we've only heard from our producers and director that about Bill, and that, yeah, he's, you know.
They probably listen to our show, so they've probably heard about it now.
Here we go, yeah.
He unfortunately passed of a drug situation.
I've read that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, but you know, and that I think represents something, that he was as talented as he was, and you said, and you just described him kind of with all the thoughts that one might have for someone to end their life that way, if he was, mm-hmm, a very private person and perhaps a dark side to him that other,
yeah,
people didn't know.
Definitely. Yeah.
So, hello.
Well, but even beyond that, I think that it was fascinating to see that, you know, when you're looking at doing a historical drama of some kind, one of the things that you're learning is that these people were people and they had positives and negatives. And you wonder a little bit about what exactly there is beyond your portrayals and beyond other portrayals of those people that they dealt with. And being in the music industry at that time was among the most difficult or challenging places to be, because there was nothing but drugs around there. So.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
That's very true.
Definitely. And I think that he used it as a coping mechanism for his nerves.
Yes.
Bobby had terrible stage fright, and I think...
He did. Wow.
He took to drinking because it was the quickest thing to calm his nerves and make him excited and, you know, kind of cut loose a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we see that early on in his career, I guess, you could say.
Drinking and drugs combined are
That's
not
right.
the best... combination.
We have a sudden in-studio guest, Michael. Would
yes,
you like
we
to tell
do.
Who this is?
Ronan Rosner, who's with the network, who's with the studio. He's actually our head technician, if you will.
Keeps us all sounding good.
Yes, I think so.
Thank you, Ronan, for my headset fix. I greatly appreciate it.
And mine. Whatever you did to his affected mine.
Mine too.
Yeah.
Yes, all of us.
We sound wonderful.
All
good
in the same boat.
On the radio.
Shall we start all over?
Let's do it. I'm ready to go.
Take two.
Brendan, can you tell me what your favorite song is to sing in this show?
Oh, that's a tough one. I love the... I think I would have to say Love and Feeling. I know it's the title song, but I love the... and I don't really sing that much of it, but it's such a fun song to sing, and I think that it really describes how they felt when they sang together, and they do say that in the show, but I really feel like that. And it's just fun to be able to sing that with Morgan, and I think that it's just it's a great song to get to sing.
How many people are actually in the company?
In the company or in the cast?
In the cast.
I want to say like about 15, give or take.
So Michelle Bernath is keeping everybody on their toes when she's staging it and doing
literally
choreography. Yeah. She's a great lady.
Yeah, she's excellent.
What else has she done?
She's a part of the group repertory of theater there, so she does a lot of their the choreography for a lot of their productions that require it.
That's great.
Yeah, and she's just, you know who she reminds me of? She reminds me of a version of Marlo Thomas, if you know who Marlo Thomas is. Danny Thomas's daughter, Marlo sure. Thomas, that yeah. girl, mm-hmm. famous, uh-huh. it's way before your time, but she is so cute and so charming and has that interesting little voice that I always kind of melt. When I'm around her, I'm greatly entertained by her. Enough of that.
No, Michael, let's hear more. You seem ready to go on that topic, brother.
No, I just like to talk about it when we have a chance to do that.
That's great. There's so many great people in this industry that we get to meet and get affected by. I think there's some really cool experiences.
And as you said, Paul Cady, who's also a friend of mine, and he's a terrific fella, and boy, is he a great musical director and a good singer himself.
Yes. So,
excellent. And he's playing a role in the show, correct?
The older Bill.
Okay. Yeah. But there's not an older Bobby, correct?
There's not.
Okay. So mm-hmm. there's an older Bill in the show because it's from his perspective, he right. ages that way.
Right.
But Bobby stays at your age the entire time.
Right.
Cool.
Maybe we should do a little shout-out to your colleagues here. Robert Axelrod is in the show. Patrick Burke.
Yeah.
Also Nicole Renee Chapman. Tim Damiano. I wonder if he's any relation to Tammy Damiano, do you think? Ask mm-hmm. him that when you see him. She's a really good singer, really good Broadway singer. Sarah Karpeles. Is that how you say that?
I think so.
Okay, we'll go with that. And, of course, yourself and Amanda Dawn Harrison and, of course, Brendan. And that kind of rounds out the company other than J. Christopher Sloan. Sorry about that, Jay. And Brooke Van Grinsven.
That's right.
Wow. On the first take.
Wow.
I'm impressed.
I can say Mackinac now, though, but it's been 20 minutes. I had to practice.
And you know, the funny thing is that you'll never say it again, probably.
Right? Ever. That's not true. I'm going to go look for an opportunity all week just to say Mackinac.
That's
see?
It.
I'm ready to go.
That's it.
Sounds like a medication, but I hear it's a great show, so I'm anxious to see a production of it sometimes.
So can we impose upon you to do something for us?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I'd like to go ahead, and I'm going to start with Swanee River. You weren't talking to me, were you, Michael?
I weren't.
You were talking to the talent
I
in the
okay. not.
I see how it is. That's good.
Fellas, this is kind of on the spot here, but do you think you might be able to do something a cappella?
Sure.
That the Righteous Brothers did yeah. and that you do in the show?
Sure.
Yeah?
What are you going to sing for us?
We're going to sing My Babe.
Yeah? Okay.
Cool.
And it was one of their earlier hits, and it's heard in the pretty much in the beginning of the show, and that kind of boosts our career, and it's before even Little Latin Loopy Lou was a mm-hmm. big hit, so... ready? Mm-hmm. Talk about my baby, not your baby, say my babe. She's so fine. Talk about my baby, not your baby, say my babe. She's so fine. She's right there to love me when people come, rain or shine. Now I love her, don't you love her, cause I love her. You hear? I said, now I love her, don't you love her, cause I love her. You hear? She upsets my soul when she whispers sweet things in my ear. How's that?
That's good. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Really nice. Really nice.
I'm always impressed when people can do that on the spot.
Boy, me too. Know? I tell you, I can't even spell certain. I'm sitting here, I'm watching them like, and to think that quickly, to be that in sync, you guys must have rehearsed this a million different times. Is that
we
correct?
Did. Yeah. We really did.
It's amazing. It's really fascinating to watch because you guys are very connected, which I think Bobby and Bill had to be as well. So that certainly yes. comes across. How do you listen to that music and not love it? Right?
Yeah.
I mean,
of
what a great thing to hear.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You'd mentioned something earlier, Morgan, real quick, about when they were first being produced, obviously a time of great racial tension,
right.
lots of stuff going on in the country, and particularly in California, some real difficult
yeah.
things.
Mm-hmm.
What was some of the roadblocks or the obstacles that they ran into as they were trying to get their music produced?
Well, when the Righteous Brothers, I was going to say when we were first starting out.
I've heard you do that a couple times. That, my friend, has taken on a role. So.
When the Righteous Brothers were first starting out, they gained notoriety because of how they sounded. So they sounded, for lack of a better term, black. And when the record producers were hearing them and, they were kind of getting popular and stuff like that, the black record producers weren't going to produce their records because they there were white guys that sounded black, and then the white producers wouldn't want to produce the Righteous Brothers because even though they were white, they sounded black. So there was kind of like this impasse that that the Righteous Brothers couldn't find, and we really do highlight that in the play, because that was definitely an obstacle that that the Righteous Brothers tried to overcome, yeah. which they obviously did, mm-hmm. and that was more when they were doing their R&B stuff, because later in their career they were starting to do more ballad stuff, which is why Love and Feeling was such a huge hit, because it was more of a ballad and it was a unique sound. But so when they were first starting out, obviously there was a lot of tension in there, and like I was saying, we really highlight that. And you know, we in a scene we're playing in front of an audience that's full of black Marines.
Wow.
And so we have to overcome that, and we sing Georgia of all songs, made famous by Ray Charles.
Yeah.
So it's definitely interesting. And you know, when we rehearsed it, we try and get that sound, and we try to get that cadence, and we also try to find like the truth and the acting behind it, and what the story is trying to tell, and how we try to tell that story. So, you know, all that are obstacles that we have to overcome in the play and then in their career.
Wasn't it members of the black community, though, who also kind of took away the word "the" and called them Righteous Brothers?
That's right. Yeah, that was actually another thing that we had talked about, because back then, you know, if somebody were to say that's a cool car, that's a cool outfit, those guys back then would say, that's a righteous outfit. That's a righteous car. And then instead of saying dude, they would call us brothers. And so they would say, that's righteous, brother. And then that's how we found out our name.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Exactly.
Very cool. That's interesting to see the social implications on art. And can you imagine if we missed out on that music because of the social context mm-hmm. that it was born within? And obviously with all of Motown, that was true from the other side of it as well. But boy, I tell you, we're lucky to live in an age where we can do what we do, and there's not those obstacles right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Wow. Interesting. I can't wait to see the show. Really.
We can't wait to open it.
Tip us off, though, when Bill Medley's there. Will
you? Yeah. Oh, we'll do our best. Absolutely. Yeah.
Give me a call. You've got the numbers, right?
Right. We'll do a secret word, codename Bill.
That's right.
Shall we embarrass these gentlemen?
I think so.
Let's do it.
Let's do it, because this is something we do with every guest on State of the Arts, as you know. And we always ask of our guests to recall some sort of an embarrassing moment during their careers, whether it's in theater or television or film. It can be funny. It can be serious. It can be horrifying. Whatever it is that you want to share with us. So I'm going to say we should start with Morgan.
Okay.
All right.
So the last production that I did at Chapman University was Hamlet, and I had the honor of playing Hamlet.
Mm-hmm. And small role?
Just a little role. You know, I don't know if you notice it. But there were a couple times where – and I only wore one costume on stage, just one, because I don't think I would even have time to do costume changes. So obviously in the first act, Hamlet has the really big – three soliloquies, mm-hmm. you know, to be, oh, what a rogue, and oh, that this too solid flesh would melt. So when, and it didn't happen once, it happened twice, because I would drink a lot of water and I would have to use the bathroom a lot. So when I would go backstage, I would immediately use the bathroom, and then I would run back on stage to do my soliloquy. So on both occasions in my to be speech, I come off stage and I notice that my fly was completely open. And, you know, it's like I don't have anything to cover it or anything like that. I'm kind of like standing with my legs a little bit split, and then the audience is right there and I'm talking to the audience. There's no fourth wall, so they're totally into it. They're totally into me and my open fly, and I'm just like, great.
Well, that'll do it.
Yeah,
I have one similar myself. I might tell it in this program. What about you, Brendan?
The one that comes to mind, I think, would be in my, I think it was like my very first show. It was a production of Sweet Charity. And I was playing Vittorio Vidal, and he was kind of like the Italian soap star kind of a thing. And he was a very big, broad character. And there's a scene where he's has to hide Charity from his like wife or his fiance who's trying to come into the apartment. And so, like, the blocking was to get Charity into the wardrobe. And she had, like, a tray of food or something. And I just remember one night, I don't know if she dropped it, but all of it fell on the floor. And it was, like, crackers and cheese and all this kind of stuff. And, like, me being just paranoid, I, like, you know, like, you feel like your soul kind of loses your body. And I didn't know what to do. And I remember I stepped on the crackers, and they broke. Mm-hmm. And then from that moment on, I was like, how are we going to pick these up? But then she picked it up, and then we just ended up, like, crushing all of them and then, like, sweeping them underneath the bed. And that, it doesn't really sound that embarrassing, but I felt like I was going to pee my pants. It was a nightmare.
Michael, what's yours? I want to hear this.
You know, this is what it was. When I was growing up in musical theater, for 3 years, I did a show called Bye Bye Birdie. I did it everywhere.
That was my first musical.
Oh, it was?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who did you play, Michael?
I was Hugo Peabody.
Yes, I graduated into that role, to Hugo Peabody. I started off as one of the teens and became Harvey Johnson at one point.
Yep.
And then Hugo. So I did it with Dick Van Dyke. I did it with Jerry Van Dyke, his brother. I did it with Sherry Lewis. I did it with George Goebel.
Were all playing Conrad?
They were all playing...
Albert Peterson.
Albert, yes.
I see. Okay.
Albert Peterson. Sherry Lewis was not playing Albert Peterson. She was playing Rose.
Of course.
At any rate, at the time, or one of the times during this time period, theaters in the round were very, very popular and very, you know, big. They were like 1,700, in some cases 3,000 people in the round.
It was the time of breaking the fourth wall and pushing the limits a little bit.
Exactly.
You're absolutely right, yeah.
And this was in Anaheim. There was a theater there called Melody Land. And there was, I'm sorry, this is not in Anaheim. That's where I started doing the show. In Santa Monica Civic Auditorium here in Santa Monica is a proscenium house. But they actually, to be in the scheme of what was happening in presenting theater during that period, they transformed it into a theater in the round on the inside. So I was doing the show there, and there at the beginning of the show, and you know this, there's a transition. It starts in New York, and there's mm-hmm. a transition to Sweet Apple, Ohio. And all of the kids that are enthralled with Conrad Birdie and so forth, they're dressed in New York clothes, and then we all underdressed in Sweet Apple clothes, and that transition would take place with a strobe light happening on stage and all sorts of chaos. And,
oh wow!
Yeah, and the dressers were coming up the aisles to take your clothes off, to grab everything, and it was split-second timing, and it was all, I mean, it was just a matter of, like, 15 seconds, you know, of the change. So I am standing there on the stage when the lights stop from the strobe and come full up, and I'm, you know, waving an American flag, and I've got my red sweater on, my little white shirt, and I felt a real draft below my waist, and I looked down, and I was standing there in my dance belt because I had forgotten to put on my pants for the Sweet Apple.
And that's why you went into radio, ladies and gentlemen.
Exactly. But I'll tell you, one half of the audience there got a good look, or got their money's worth, I suppose. You know, at that time, I had a great butt, so, you know, it was like...
But can we all just be glad that was way before cell phones? Because at this point, you know that's captured on something somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
It'd be all over Twitter. Right.
That is a serious, embarrassing moment.
It was, and there was nothing I could do about it except continue through the rest of the scene.
Yeah. You did the entire scene in your dance
Well, part? I mean, you know, it was very quick.
I see.
As soon as I was able to leave, I did leave.
Yeah. This is something that needs to be added into the college curriculum. Also, actors, don't forget to put on your pants.
Right.
Yes, exactly.
That's amazing.
What about you?
Oh, I've had a few, but fortunately, I've always left my pants on, which has been good. I, of course, told you about Romeo and Juliet when I had the coughing fit as a dead Tybalt, and I winced and wheezed on stage, desperately trying to, you know, stifle it with a broken wrist. That was about as bad as it got for me. There was also one time when I was in high school theater and we were still learning theater etiquette,
right.
And everybody was told to walk very carefully backstage.
Right.
And I was trying to do my job, and I was walking very, very carefully, and I was looking at my feet not to trip over any of the cords that were back there. And I walked headlong into the star senior who was in the show getting ready to do her big musical number in Oklahoma. And I was playing Cordy Lum, one of the smaller parts. And I ran right into her and knocked her down, and she let out a squeal that was actually very similar to Gertie in Oklahoma. And everybody thought that Gertie had made the mistake, and I had to take the blame for it in front of the entire cast. And the star, Jan, was very, very kind to me. She said, no, it can happen to anybody. But I was horrified because I also had a tremendous crush on her. So that ended any chance I had with her there. So, but I think I'm doing okay. As long as my pants stay on in all these stories, I'm doing just fine. You
right,
guys
yeah.
have a rough life out there.
My pants were semi-on. Semi-on.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for being here today. It's
been
a pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. But before we go, show, let's tell our audience one more time about how to see this wonderful play, That Love and Feeling, at the Lonnie Chapman Theater, presented by the Group Repertory Theater Company in North Hollywood. And for tickets, it opens tomorrow night, December 11th, and it runs through January 24th. For tickets, simply go to thegrouprep.com or call 818-763-5990. And then you've got your show, Andrew.
Thank you, sir.
Christmas Carol out there at the beautiful Share Forum at the Thousand Oaks Civic Arts Plaza. And for tickets, call Ticketmaster. Or you can call the Thousand Oaks Civic Arts Plaza box office at 805-449-2787. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Have a great week. We'll look forward to seeing everybody next week, same time.
See you on the radio.